This is Roar Bianis with Musings on Systems Change. I'm going to start a series on green capitalism, and today I'm going to talk about different reasons for the way that we have exploited nature. There are political, economic, scientific, and even psychological reasons why we destroy nature. And I'm going to introduce this theme or this topic by talking about capitalism in this framework, within these four areas. Capitalism has created unprecedented wealth, but also growing economic inequality. It has given Western nations easy access to consumer items people in other parts of the world can only dream of. But it has also created a world of rich and poor. Market capitalism's exploitation of energy from oil and coal, as well as raw materials such as steel, wood, and agricultural land, made the Western world industrious and materially abundant. But this wealth creation also resulted in environmental damages, pollution, and destruction of land, sea, and atmosphere. Most notably, the potentially catastrophic effects of global warming. But why did our economic system end up destroying what it depends on for its resources to grow and survive? Why did we end up biting the hand that feeds us? There are so many complex reasons we human destroy the environment, but the main ones can be grouped into four categories: psychological, economic, political, and scientific. Human psychology forms cultures and drives human behavior, which again informs our economic, political, and scientific decisions and inventions. The way we feel and think make up who we are as individuals and groups. The psychological reason for environmental destruction is related to the fundamental human trait we call greed, our insatiable need for more. If we desire more meat, we will justify our need by cutting down the rainforest to grow soybeans to feed our pigs, and we will imprison chickens in inhumane cages and pump them full of growth hormones to fulfill our desire for more lean white meat. Not coincidentally, our modern economy is centered around fulfilling these personal needs. Indeed, the very heart of modern capitalism rests on the psychology of rewarding this behavior. Remember, Adam Smith basically said that we humans are selfish, and out of that selfishness, we produce, we make, we create. And this is what capitalism is built on. By gratifying the human compulsion for more, modern consumerism, the so-called shop till you drop culture, has been shaped. And this reward system, this culture, is based on capitalism's main driving force, the profit motive. So selfishness gave the impulse to want more, to create more, and this is what capitalism is based on, the profit motive. What capitalism is not so good at is sharing, collaboration, which is another human trait, of course, but which is not such an important part of the capitalist system. And that is the main defect of the capitalist system. Scientific inventions and political laws are thus developed to support the psychology and economy based on our insatiable need to have more material goods and money. The complexity of our environmental problems and how they often involve a spectrum of issues can be witnessed in how we currently try to solve them, or more often than not, in how we try to avoid taking the trouble to solve them. Faced with this growing realization that global warming caused by carbon emission is a real threat to the future of life on planet Earth, oil-rich Norway, my birth country, continues to attend climate conferences and to project itself as an international leader in climate politics. For years, Norway's left-green government policies have been based on international trading schemes designed to set caps on greenhouse gas emissions. The right-wing government elected in 2013 has promised to continue these policies, and which they have, which allow producers in excess of the allocated amount of emissions to purchase so-called carbon credits, the Green Deal, so to speak, from businesses or nations that are producing greenhouse gases below their set emissions cap. For Norway, this has meant a continued increase in carbon emissions at home, while helping Bangladesh improve rural cooking stoves, allowing this developing country to reduce its carbon emissions. In return, Norway has been able to grow its economy, support its citizens' ever-increasing consumer habits, and expand its oil industry. All the while, the country's own carbon footprint has naturally increased, a habit justified by purchasing carbon credits from Bangladesh. Norwegian journalist and author Erik Martinussen called this contradictory phenomenon the climate politics that disappeared. While Norway, early on in the climate debate, promised to reduce its production of CO2, an effort that would have required economic, political, scientific, and psychological changes on a national scale, it has instead, like so many industrial countries and businesses, chosen a much easier route to purchase carbon credits in poor countries. Unfortunately, within the current market economy, this is too often how we solve our environmental problems. This is, in other words, too often the way that green capitalism functions, that sustainable capitalism functions, and so on. This is the method used. It is very simplistic. And it basically keeps us continuing to grow the capitalist model and to continue to pollute. So sustainable capitalism, in a way, is an oxymoron. Let's get into this a little deeper and let's look at some of the critics of sustainable capitalism. Is it just another mean green meme? Is it just another green mean machine? While our lack of environmental awareness and the destructive habits it has led to has many causes, the growing trend toward a world more and more material stuff is certainly one of the main causes of environmental destruction. In her book, Green Gone Wrong, Heather Rogers dispels the common myth that if we just buy enough green consumer goods, we can solve global warming, pollution, and rainforest clear-cutting. We cannot simply buy our way out of the very problems Western consumer culture has caused in the first place, she proclaims. The green capitalist consumerism now favored by many corporations, environmental activists, and green political parties falls way short of providing solutions to our environmental crisis. She demonstrates with startling facts and first-person accounts from all over the world that corporate green capitalism often increases environmental problems instead of fixing them. Now, I'm not saying that all the green parties are simply saying that green consumerism is going to solve the problems. I'm not saying that. I'm just trying here to point out the limits or the defect within that kind of thinking or the defective thinking behind it. Large corporations such as American-based General Mills, with 7 production facilities in Europe alone, are buying up smaller organic companies like jam producer Cascadian Farms, and in the name of profit, they relax many of the strict organic standards smaller growers abide by. In America, General Mills is avoiding genetically modified food labeling of its products, despite growing consumer demands. Seeking the lowest cost, Western food producers and retailers, writes Rogers, increasingly source from large producers in developing countries where land and labor is cheap and environmental protection lax. In South America, multinational corporations are now growing organic sugar and other crops on clear-cut land in the Amazon rainforest. The Paraguayan organic sugar producer, ASPA, which exports most of its sugar to the US and the EU, exemplifies how the growing corporate organic agriculture business works. In the last 15 years, in the US and Europe, there has been a double-digit growth in the corporate organic food market. According to Wall Street Factsheet, an online business magazine, the organic foods business is worth over $50 billion globally, and with a new trade agreement between the United States and the European Union opening up new markets, that number could double within the next few years. Meanwhile, smaller organic farms and co-ops have a difficult time staying in business while competing against the pressure from these larger organic agribusiness companies, often specializing in making organic food more processed, packaged, fat and sugar-laced. Rogers sums up her findings with a stark warning for green capitalism's future. If the profit motive stays in place, economic growth in all its destructiveness will continue apace. So, in other words, this profit motive, if that is the guiding principle of our economy, we will, no matter what we call it, sustainable capitalism, green capitalism, or whatever you call it, will continue, and it will cause environmental problems. And this is the cause of climate change. This is the cause of the destruction of the environment. This is the cause of most of our economic and environmental problem today. So listen in, folks. Check in next time. We'll go deeper into some of the issues underlying the weaknesses of green capitalism. Thank you for listening.